Hello and welcome to the Football DNA podcast. Today we are delighted to be joined by Richard Shorter, the non-perfect dad, discussing all things parents in football. We are also delighted to be joined by Ross Brooks, our co-host, a West Ham United Academy coach, who will discuss with Richard how important a role a parents play in youth football. So Ross, over to you and Richard.
Richard, brilliant to have you involved on this podcast. I think it's a really interesting topic, talking about parents in sports. It's something obviously you've been campaigning as such with your sort of work around the non-perfect dad. So I suppose before we begin, if you could just give us a little bit of an introduction into your background and tell us a little bit more about the work that you've been doing.
Ross, mate, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate that. I think, you know, in most coach surveys, challenges with parents and connecting with parents well is what coaches feedback with great regularity about the challenges of being coaches. I started in the sports world a number of years ago, supporting coaches to have better connections with parents, really. I think most coaches recognise most parents' behaviour is driven by well-meaningness, but sometimes that behaviour becomes unhelpful for both the child and for the coach and for the whole team. So I have spent the last 20 years in different contexts working with parents to support parent behavioural change, helping parents realise that some of their well-meaning behaviour, if turned up too loud, can be disruptive to kids getting the best outcomes. So I've worked a lot with social services, working at the sharp and ugly end of safeguarding. I'm also a church minister, so I juggle that in Romford in Essex with being non-perfect dad. And for 20 years, it's been my passion to see community development, community change through helping teachers, coaches, youth leaders, churches connect with parents in a far healthier, deeper way. And then, like I say, in the last 4 years, to be in the sports world, working with some great grassroots clubs, but also working with Premiership football clubs, as well as across other sports as well. So working with England rugby, England hockey, England cricket, working with a number of Premiership rugby clubs, has just been a real privilege, a real joy to help coaches and parents nurture a relationship with one another, which gives better outcomes for kids from their sport experience, basically.
Fantastic. And yeah, pretty good intro. I mean, the experience that you've had over the past 20 years, I'm sure, is sort of really geared you to now sort of start tackling the sporting world. I'm intrigued by this title of the non-perfect dad. So can you sort of elaborate as to what that then means, and a little bit more around, you know, that work and how you've come across sort of entering that field, really?
Yeah, well, I guess all that experience over the last 20 years means I'm pretty unshockable. I mean, I don't see any parent behaviour that shocks me that much anymore. Some parent behaviour saddens me, but I suppose the depth of that experience means that I've not faced every situation, but I'm pretty well equipped to support coaches with lots of situations. Why the non-perfect dad? I think for two reasons. One, when I started this business, this is the first business I've run. Running a business is a bit weird. All those who run a business know that there's some challenges in that. And I wanted to be able to kind of market myself, for want of a less crude word, with authenticity. And I just looked at other parenting coaches showing perfect pictures of them and their perfect families. And I just looked at my family. I've got three awesome kids, but we are far from perfect. And I was just like, my kids are going to cane me if I try and present myself as anything other than non-perfect. And I was like, that's it then, isn't it? That's my business title, non-perfect dad. And I just kind of ran with it from there. So now when my kids say, Dad, how can you be a parenting coach? You're a rubbish dad. I'm like, well, it says on the tin, non-perfect. So I haven't lied to anybody. But also, I just think, mate, there's, whilst I get coaches' challenges, I think there's also this expectation on parents and parent coaches to just be perfect. It's unrealistic. It's unfair. Parenting is one of the most important jobs we'll ever do, but it's one of the hardest jobs to get right all the time. In fact, it's impossible to get right all the time because you're dealing with developing children. And so I just rather quirkily call myself non-perfect dad. And I think that kind of resonates with both parents and coaches as to, oh, here's somebody who's just going to be honest, really. And I think to help that parent-coach relationship, we just need greater honesty, mate.
Yeah, and that honestly, I think, strives through. I think certainly that people aiming to become a perfect parent, and often institutions and sports settings, you know, have these expectations and responsibilities from the parents to hit all the different things that they need to be the perfect parent. I suppose from your experience as a parent in sport, have you come across a perfect parent then?
No, I've come across some really good ones, but the really good ones are just aware of their weaknesses and play to their strengths and have a good network to support their weaknesses. So I haven't come across a perfect parent. I think there's good parenting styles. I think there's healthy parenting styles. And I think there's unhealthy. But no, I haven't come across the perfect parent, but I have come across grassroots clubs right up to Premiership football clubs that do have really good relationships with their parents, really good relationships with their coaches. And those places where it's good, it's not perfect, but it's good, are really good at acknowledging that this isn't going to be perfect. So they have good systems and structures and good communication in place so that when it goes a bit wrong, people have a way of dealing with it and a healthy set of processes to challenge some of that challenge.
Fantastic. And you mentioned parents being aware of their weaknesses. So what are some of the common things that you feel when you've been working with parents in sport, what they need sort of most help with? Is there any sort of common themes across the different environments that you've worked in so far?
Yeah, I mean, I think the first I think the first thing we need to help parents with is that parenting, how do you know you're being a successful parent? It's a pretty bizarre thing to try and measure. And we live in a results orientated society. So what parents land up doing, and are totally understandable, is they join in with the rest of society going, well, what are my kids' school grades? Who are my kids hanging out with? And what are they winning sports matches? In your case, soccer matches. Are they winning football matches? Because that's going to be how I measure success, if my kid is doing all right. Actually, we know none of those things are perfect measurements for success. They might be indicators in some ways, but they're not perfect measures of success. And what we know is the kind of mindset, character type skills that kids can develop through all their childhood experiences. It's the ability to use those later on in life that makes them a successful person and therefore makes our parenting successful. But it's really hard to measure how your kid's character is growing because kids, especially at home, fluctuate. So they have bad days and good days and you're like, are they getting this? Are they not? So I think the first thing we try and help parents do, and I think it's not helped because I think clubs, Ross, really hammer the results thing as well. So I will speak to coaches, go, oh yeah, our parents have got major expectation management issues. And then I'll go and visit the club, whether it be grassroots or Premiership football, and they are just hammering on about results. And it's like, well, no wonder parents have got expectation management issues. Your environment is all about results and selection. So I think the first thing we need to do is help institutions have a good conversation about, there's nothing wrong with winning, by the way, absolutely nothing wrong with winning. There's nothing wrong with celebrating a scoreline. But what we want to be doing is kind of lifting the lid of that and seeing what's happening underneath it and what are the processes, skills, character that our kids are developing that are helping them embrace that. And so we need to be helping parents be process orientated rather than results orientated. And that's a lifelong challenge. Even as a dad of three, even though I speak this, there are still times when I'm like, oh, crumbs, that result, whether it be at school or sport, what does that mean? So it's about helping parents do that. I think the second thing is about helping parents realize that sport is really emotional. Now, parents know that, but it's okay for sport to be emotional. I think we land up with this, and you'll have listeners around the world, but in the UK, we have this British stiff upper lip thing where it's like, just swallow your emotions. And so we say to parents, either get really emotional about sport, particularly when they win. Aren't we proud? Let's all celebrate and get really emotional. But if it's going wrong and we then have a reaction that the coaches or the club don't like, we expect parents to swallow that emotion rather than saying, actually, sport is emotional. That's what sport does. It's the role it plays in our society. It's doubly emotional if your kid is playing that sport. So what we have to help parents do is realize that the emotion that we direct to the team we support on a Saturday, that adult team, is different to the emotion we direct on a Sunday morning or Saturday morning to our kids' team. It's different. There's not so much at stake, but also it's still emotional. And so we need to help parents learn to manage those emotions. So my son's a big rugby fan. He's a big rugby player. And And so I won't stand with the other parents on one of the teams that he plays for, because I know that their behaviour really winds me up. So I will go and stand behind the post. Now, I know in certain football, there's the respect line and you're only allowed in certain places. And obviously, there's no goalkeeper in rugby for me to be distracting. But basically, what I'm saying is, I know when I'm going to get emotional. I want to enjoy watching my kid play sport. And when I get in the car, my kid would be the first person I've spoken to. And if I don't manage those emotions, all my frustration about those parents will come out. I might not talk about those parents, but my kid will pick up that I'm in a heightened state of emotion in that first conversation with them in the car after the game. And that's just going to be really, really unhelpful for my kid to transfer, to use them as almost therapy for my emotional challenges of dealing with those parents. So I think, so the first thing is let's work on process rather than results. Not that there's anything wrong with results, but let's focus primarily on process. Let's learn what sport does to us emotionally, and let's be honest about that. Say it's okay. It's okay if your kid misses a sitter for you to feel crushed. That's totally okay. That's totally normal. Some parents will, some parents won't, but it's how you deal with that feeling at that point that is important. And then I think thirdly, we need to be teaching parents and coaches as well that sport is just really subjective. Like selection, coaching style, strategies on a Saturday or Sunday for a girls team or boys team, it's just all really, really subjective. And whilst I might have played football and I might run a football group, I run an adult football group, when my kids play football, they're under a different coach, and that's, so that's just totally subjective. And so if we can help parents realise the subjective nature of sport, then we're going to help them, I think, be kinder to coaches, kinder to their children, kinder to themselves in the process of trying to work out how to get better and move forward at this sport.
Fantastic. Yeah, I think three really useful tips there and bits of advice. I'm really interested in this concept of acknowledging how emotional sport can be. And I suppose what that then allows coaches and clubs to do by admitting that and acknowledging that is actually probably build a stronger connection with the parents, because they feel that you're understanding where they're coming from and not expecting them to stand without emotion on the sideline when their child is playing. So I suppose on that then, I mean, is there any particular advice you'd give to coaches or clubs in how they engage with their parents? I mean, have you got some tools or strategies that they may look into further?
Yeah, mate. I mean, there's lots of things that we can do. I mean, to be honest with you, I think the first thing would be to try and have a time when you get together with the parents and just be honest about the emotional stuff. And the first time you do that, I would encourage you to give the parents some tools as to what they can use. But then I would gather the parents again mid-season and say, how are those tools going? Have you thought of any other tools? And then let the parents start to develop their own team tools. I went to a school and they were playing their local rivals, and it was their sixth form first team. So it was, you know, it's a big, big, big rival derby. And I went and spoke to the parents, because Non-Perfect Dad does parenting talks and coach education and other bits and pieces that you can find out about on the web. But I was doing a parent talk before this game, and I said to the guys, why don't we do a halftime team talk? In fact, no, it wasn't me who suggested that. I'm taking credit for it. It was the coach who said, let's do a halftime team talk. And I said, what, for the parents? He went, yeah. I said, brilliant idea. So at halftime, I walked onto the pitch and brought all the parents from that school onto the pitch with me. And I was just like, how is this going for you? And all the parents started talking about, oh, my son is doing well, or my son isn't doing well. I was like, no, I'm not saying how's it going for your son, how's it going for you? And so then the parents then had a really good 10-minute conversation at halftime about how they were feeling. One parent was like, oh, my son went off injured. I can't see if he's all right. I mean, he's hobbling. I'm worried about him. The other parents were like, well, yeah, look, the physio is really good. Don't we? You know, there was really good mutual emotional support. It was a really tight, tense game. And so having that parent halftime team talk helped the parents manage their emotions. So if you co-coach with people and you know it's a really tight game and it's an emotional game, I would go over and get the parents together and go, whew, this is emotional, isn't it? Let's just talk this out, because we want to be the best support we can be for our kids. And I would always try and phrase it like that in the parenting engagement world. We're all parents. I don't think turn up to be better parents. I think parents turn up to get better outcomes for their kids. So I So Non-Perfect Dad very rarely runs parenting courses or whatever. I will run courses to help parents support their kids better and get better outcomes for their kids, if that kind of makes sense. So there's the halftime team talk. You can play games during during matches. You can help set the narrative by, and in these COVID days, this might not be possible. So I'm conscious that people will need to contextualize this to whatever part of football they're in and wherever you are in the world because of how COVID is affecting this. So, but I'm a massive fan of getting parents together at the end of a training session and or at the end of a match and letting them eavesdrop on the final pep talk from the coach. And I wouldn't make that talk loads of tech-tac stuff because I don't think that's a good time as a coach to do loads of tech-tac stuff just to do about to send the kids off. I think that's just a real encouragement, pointing out what we did well, acknowledging any emotion that comes with the match. So, you know, it might be like, oh, we had a tough referee today. And that's okay because refereeing is subjective, just like coaching is subjective. And we need to learn how to handle that. And parents, I'm really proud of your daughters in the way that they've handled this. So parents, on the way home, I'd really like you to tell your daughters about a time that they had to deal with a boss who didn't really listen to them and how they processed that. And girls, I'm really looking forward to hearing the stories that you share when we come back to training next week. So do you see what I've done there? I've brought the parents together. I've acknowledged the issue, but I've tried to frame it better. And then I've set the narrative for those parents who were willing to listen for the first part of that car journey when the kids get back into the car. So it's not the parent getting in the car and moaning about the referee, for example. It's the parent talking about experiences about how you deal with situations like that.
Brilliant. And I suppose when you're looking at the child or the player, I mean, there's some fantastic strategies for parents. So from your experience then, what, you know, once you've embedded this and implemented this and you've created a real brilliant environment for your parents in terms of having an open dialogue with their coaches and their club, have you noticed any benefits to the player or the child from that? Have you seen a difference in how they behave or how the environment looks for them?
Yes, because I mean, look, mate, if kids turn up anxious because of the car journey they've had on the way there, or kids become anxious or the car journey on the way home focuses on the wrong things just to set on the car journey or the home environment for that week, then you're going to have players who turn up with bigger anxiety levels, more concerned about pleasing mum and dad, looking over to mum and dad. Where we have seen this work well, we see kids relax and parents relax. And that means that coaches can get on and coach more. I mean, that's the simple bottom line. When kids are relaxed, when parents are affirming the coach behavior, then we can see that more. And it's fascinating talking and getting feedback from parents and from players. I mean, I do think this is an area I'd like to research more, is to the impact that it actually has on kids. And that's quite tricky to try and research. But certainly we're seeing parents just talk about more relaxed car journeys. And therefore that means kids are more relaxed, which must mean they're more coachable.
Brilliant. And I suppose you get two different types of parents from my point of view. You often either get the shouting parents that make it really clear how they're feeling and, you know, will be sort of on your case all the time. And, you know, but you also get those silent parents where actually you don't really know a great deal about them and how they are being with their child on the way home or what kind of messages they're giving. So I suppose, how do you tackle those two different types of parents? I'm sort of really intrigued by those parents that maybe don't give away a lot, but actually there may be some things going on that you just don't know about.
Mate, that's a great question. And I think it's understandable why this happens, but the reality is the first parent you talk about, the kind of gobby one on the sideline, they're the ones that draw the coach's attention, and so therefore tend to be labelled the bad ones. So if you've got a mum or a dad who's really yelling on the sideline, it's assumed that they're a bad sports parent, whereas the quiet one is assumed to be the good sports parent. Now, I'm not for a second advocating that screaming or shouting on the sideline is a good thing, but you just don't know then what happens in the car. And so the danger is that as coaches, we ignore the quiet ones because we just think, well, they're not noisy in my environment, so they must be doing fine. And we get frustrated with the loud ones. And actually, I know some loud, mouthy parents or silence who are brilliant off the pitch. They're just a nightmare when they're standing next to the pitch, but off the pitch they're actually really good mums and dads. And like vice versa, I know some parents who will quietly seethe that you won't know they're quietly seething, but their kid will look over and know they're quietly seething. And when they get in the car, there's a problem. So I think the first thing coaches need to be doing, and this is tricky, you know, I coach a bit, and I don't coach soccer, I coach a bit of hockey. And I know it's hard, especially if you haven't got enough people around, but you do need to be making, the first thing you need to be doing is making that connection with all parents. There needs to be, whether it's a virtual high five because of COVID or whatever, you need to be getting to know parents' first names. And the best way to do that is to go, oh, whose parent are you? Oh, you're Jane's dad. Brilliant. And listen, I just want to say we love having Jane here because she displays these character traits, X and Y. And I would always, when I praise a kid to parents, I would always pick character traits rather than outcomes, because again, that leads back to the conversation we've already had, that I want parents to be focusing on process, not results. So I don't want to be saying Jane scored a great penalty. I want to be saying the way Jane prepared herself for that penalty, the way she, I could see her take a deep breath and center herself. We love that about Jane here. The way she said, do you see what I'm saying there? So we can say, I'm enjoying the goal, but we want us to talk about the process rather than just the result. And I think by just starting to have those conversations, you get to know those parents a bit. I would listen to the kids. So I think that you, again, you want to just be asking kids, not because you're trying to psychoanalyze them or you're trying to build up a massive profile, but you just want to be asking kids, what's the best thing mum and dad do? And you want to get them all to write their answers down on a post-it note or whatever. And then you just want to show the parents, this is the best stuff mum and dad do. Can you work out which of these is your kids? Answer. So you're starting to see, you're starting to hear the kids' narrative around what mum and dad are doing, because the silent ones may also be brilliant at home. You just don't know that. And it just starts to give you a broader picture of kind of what's happening at home. If you go on a team bus somewhere, I mean, my memories of going on a team bus as a kid is the coaches would sit at the front and we'd sit at the back and try and sing as many cheeky songs as we could get away with before the coach told us to stop being rude. That was my memory of sport as a kid. What I love is one of my favourite coaches in the world, a guy called Jake, he and I have just chatted about this stuff. And so he now uses the coach trip as a like a mentoring thing. So he will go up and down the coach, and it's his intention to have 5 minutes with every kid on the coach each week. So, and that might just be nothing to do with football, just talking about, we're going up there. Have you been there before? What have you done with your week? What's the best bit of your week been? How can I help mum and dad? What are mum and dad's good habits, bad habits? But by getting to know your kids, or your players, sorry, by getting to know your players, you can help support the home environment better.
Brilliant. And I want to ask a question here, and sort of probably a bit of a curveball, but in terms of parents then, what is the reason for parents entering sport with their children? You know, do you find that most parents enter it to help their child develop, let them have fun, or do you feel most parents enter with the intention of them becoming a professional athlete or footballer in this case? And I suppose, how do you then tackle that? If they've got these sort of internal motivations to see their child achieve success with whatever success is going to be for them.
Mate, great question. When you say enter, do you mean like sign them up for sport, sign them up for...
Yeah. So when because you might find that some, I don't know if you from your experience, whether you find some parents, they go into a footballing environment because they genuinely believe their child is going to be a professional footballer. So, I mean, how do you deal with that? Or is that a common issue?
Sorry to talk about it. Yes, I think it is a common issue. And I think it's a common issue because there's a very natural set of processes going on there. And the very natural set of processes is, this is my offspring. I want good for them. If I bring them to football, the best good that I know in the football environment is to be a professional footballer. So I don't think it's an unnatural response, nor do I necessarily think it's a wrong response. I just think it has to be held in, like all things, mate, it just has to be held in balance. We have to help people hold it in balance. You know, having done work with teams like Man United and been to Old Trafford and done parent sessions at that incredibly famous ground, you know, and Old Trafford, Man United do a great job with their parents, by the way. And you speak to parents there, a number of them are clearly that they are like super pumped about that dream of their kid playing for Man United. But even in that context, there are still a load of parents who are like, yeah, okay, whatever. You know, there's always seems to be just a really mixed bag. I think the really important thing for me is that we help parents be honest about that. And then we help parents see the statistical and reality of it. And we help parents see the subjective reality of it, because not only statistically it's a very small possibility, but it's such a subjective nature thing as well. I think there's nothing wrong with parents bringing their kids along to their first football session at four, thinking, I hope they really enjoy this game for the rest of their lives. I think there would be something wrong if after their first football session, they then go down the pub and go, oh, he's really good, you know, he's really, really good. I'm going to sign him up for X, Y, Z. That would be really unhelpful. But we all know players who make it because that's what their mum or dad did. So for me, it's an interesting challenge. I think for me, it's what coaches need to be very mindful of their behaviour. So like I said, my son's a rugby player, but when it got to the age where the local pathway opened up for him, and our local pathways were Saracens, parents just went giddy about it. And I thought my son's local grassroots rugby club did a great job at trying to keep the parents' feet on the ground. Like, guys, you just need to know the numbers here are ridiculous and hardly anybody makes it through. And we're putting these kids through to have an experience, not to have success. And so for me, I would want to be helping parents and redirect parents to think about what experiences this season are you going to get out of this. And it's one of the reasons why I did with a grassroots soccer club in America. We did a pre-season video tool for parents with their kids. So before kids were allowed to register for the club for the year, the parents had to complete this video course. And a huge chunk of that was about thinking, right, in the next 12 months, in the next season, what experiences do you want your kid to get out of this? Yeah, you might have dreams for the future, but in the next 12 months, what are realistic goals for an under 7 or an under 17 or whatever age, boy or girl, to have in this coming season? And how can you as parents help support them having those experiences well? And those experiences probably include, but not limited to, we want them to experience great teamwork. We want them to experience great coaching. We want them to experience disappointments as well as success, because we know what those are like. We want them to experience challenge. We want them to experience feeling just part of a tribe. And so then for a parent, I'm not then thinking about them with their professional contract. I'm thinking, actually, what is their experience as teammates and how can I help reinforce that? How can I support that? How can I help? They've dealt with disappointment. So instead of me giving the kid a long list of excuses, oh, it's the coach's fault, it's the ref's fault, it's the weather, whatever. Right, my kid's experiencing disappointment. How would I want them to handle disappointment later in life? I'd want them to be balanced. I want them to be rational. I'd want them to be assertive. Okay, great. Well, let's have some conversations with them about how to do that.
Fantastic. And one of the things I've always been interested in, you hear sort of different stories of successful athletes where their dad or their mum or their parents have not conform to how you'd educate parents on behaving, and actually they've done everything against what they're supposed to. So I mean, in your experience, have you come across any parents of successful athletes that maybe don't follow some of the things that clubs would be encouraging and educating on, and if so, what would be the best way of tackling them, you know, and can you?
Mate, it's a great question. And it's I mean, there's quite a bit of research out there, superstars versus almost research by Collins, McMorrana and McCarthy, some really interesting research. And they talk about that those players who seem to become superstars in their sport, not just football, but across sports, seem to have what they call supportive but distant parents. So that would be those who do the good behaviour that you and I would list quite quickly, and that those parents who are super pushy actually land up hindering their child's development. And I think it's good research, it's worth looking at. The problem is we all know exceptions to that rule, don't we? you know, it's like my wife's granddad who smoked every day till he was 94 kind of thing. You know, it's like we just know exceptions to the rules, and that's the problem for parents. I think the first thing I want to say is super pushy parents, you're unlikely to get in the room for your meetings anyway, because they probably arrogantly think they've got it all sorted. The other thing I think I want to say is that I think that it's a parent's right. I haven't totally thought this through, so if people listening don't agree with me, come push back. Well, I thought it through, but I'm not sure where I finish on this. I think as a parent, you have the right to push your kids as hard as you want to without it being abusive, if that kind of makes sense. So if you as a parent want your parent-child relationship to be all about, I don't know, let's look at Lewis Hamilton, equaled the world number of wins, Schumacher's 91, I think it was, wasn't it, at the weekend. So by the time this goes out, he may have even beaten that. But he recently said, I lost my relationship with my dad through through doing this. You look at Andre Agassi. He talked about basically his relationship with his dad fueled his drug and tennis passion. And just a fascinating, Andre Agassi's autobiography is fascinating from talking about that relationship. You look in the football world, Lampard recently said, didn't he, you know, my dad was really hard and that helped me become successful. But also, well, that was the headline after the podcast that he was on. But actually, when you listen to the podcast and listen to what he said, he actually just talked about his mum's nurturing switch off from football as well. So who was it that made him successful? His dad's drive or his mum's nurturing compassion? You know, the research would say his mum's nurturing compassion probably had a bigger impact on him than his dad's pushiness. So for me, I think I would want to keep calling parents back to the sorts of values that they want. I would want to keep calling parents back to the long-term legacy of how they connect with their children on sport. But I recognise that as if it's not abusive, and as in, like, would social services get involved abusive, then we get into the realm of, is that a parent's right to bring their child up like that, even if we can see the damage they're doing? I don't know. It's philosophically, I think it's a very, very good question. I think the best thing a grassroots club can do is love the kid, support the kid, give the kid the best mental skills that they can, and try and draw the parents in and giving those good mental skills as well.
Fantastic. Yeah, and I suppose probably going off a little bit off the script, but it's sort of just sprung to mind, Richard, in terms of sort of social media and how that can be used by parents to celebrate success, I suppose, but also build these mini superstars. I mean, have you had to work with any parents or clubs on that front? And, you know, is there any research or advice you'd give to parents on potentially the damage that this could have on?
Yeah, I mean, well, I think the superstars versus almost is a really good piece of research as well, worth looking at. I do number ones. I do one-to-ones with parents as well, and often the one-to-one with the parent is because the parent wants to fix their child's what they perceive loss of competitive edge or loss of form, and in the end, the one-to-ones land up me supporting the parents to chill out a bit. So I have worked with a number of parents who are very, very driven, and helped them to have a better set of perspectives on it, particularly when they, I think, mate, the child's voice is really powerful in this. And so often when kids are celebrated as a superstar and put on this pedestal, their voice kind of gets lost in it. And also the kid starts to wear that as a hat because the kid believes intrinsically their value comes from being a superstar. When you help the kid express that actually that's not who they actually want to be known as, they don't mind being a superstar, but they'd rather be known as being themselves, then that can be a very sobering understanding for parents. It needs to be done well and handled well. Yes, I mean, I think the stuff on social media is interesting. I think people use social media as a justification for life and keeping up with the Joneses. I think sports clubs do exactly the same, mate. I think when you look at sports clubs and how they use social media, I think parents are just, I think everyone's just copying each other's, like, woohoo, here's my perfect family, look at my perfect child, here's my trophy. I mean, I hate that time of year when kids are getting, like, Player of the Year awards because you just know which parents are going to be bragging about it. So I think again, just consistent messaging, consistent relationships, consistent support. If you've got a grassroots club, you might have known those parents for 5 or 6 years. And that is a great, if you've got to know them, you can get alongside them and go, listen, mate, I know you love it, that they're really, really good, but I just worry that are they okay with that? You know, once you get to know the players well, you can and the parents well, you could probably have a little bit more of a one-to-one conversation, just gently go in. And don't forget, it's almost always well-meaningly. So it's like, look, I understand you want them to do well, and that's totally normal. Do we need to be putting this much pressure on them?
Yeah, and the other thing I've been really interested by, you know, in my experience, is almost sometimes parents feeling that they need to make up for either lost time or perhaps their son or daughter isn't performing as well as they want them to. And then there's sort of a feel of a need to increase their level of opportunities by more provision, one-to-one coaching, going and doing more training. So I suppose for any parent, you know, if they find that their child is having a bit of a dip in how they're doing, and, you know, they're thinking that maybe the best way of solving that is by increasing the amount of training to try and make up for that difference. You know, how would you sort of educate parents on knowing when is too much, if that makes sense? You know, have you got any sort of advice for parents on that front?
Mate, that's that is a great question. I think going back to the emotional thing, so this is where I go, you know, those three things I said at the beginning do always loop into everything, is that helping our children deal with disappointment is I think one of the biggest challenges for parents, because we want to fix it. We've been fixing their disappointment. You know, when they were little, they cried and we had to fix their disappointment. What was it? I needed my bum changing. I need some food. And so we've had this journey of trying to work out when to help them fix it and when not to. And so I think for me, again, on that pre-season video course we did, we talked to the parents straight up about what happens when disappointment comes and what are the best processes for a parent to engage in to support that development of that child in that process. So for example, they've been dropped. Yeah. And it, like you say, in a child, a parent wants them to make up. So the parent will email the coach, what do they need to work on, coach? I'll get them working on it at home, etc. But that's all the parent driven. Rather than the parent saying to the kid, okay, do you want to get back in the team? Yes or no? Because it is the kid's choice, ultimately, if they want it. You do. Okay, what do you need to do? How can I support you? Well, I don't know what to work on. Can you ask coach? Well, why can't you ask coach? Oh, I don't know how I'd do that. Okay, well, let's practice that conversation. I'll pretend to be the coach. You go and ask the coach. So the parent is kind of helping support from the background. I think injury is also really difficult. I think getting dropped from pathways is the thing I get emailed most about from a parent. My son or daughter's just been dropped or long-term injured out for the season and they're heartbroken. What do I do? And I'm just letting them be heartbroken. That's okay. Love them. If they're still moping in their room after 2 weeks, then you might need to start doing some interventions. But it's okay for kids to be heartbroken. And so again, for me, we need to be coaching parents on what to do in that spot. You think about how much coach development stuff there is out there for coaches. What is the kind of parent development stuff out there to help parents deal with? There's very little, hence the reason I do what I do. So for me, I love running sessions live because it's lots of games, there's lots of fun. I try and stimulate those emotions in parents. We have a good time. But if it's in a pathway, so whether it be like England rugby under 18s or Manchester United or whatever, one of the questions I'll often ask parents to practice with one another is I'll say, okay, you've just got the letter or the phone call or just had the meeting to say your son or daughter's been dropped from this and thank you very much, kind of thing. And you can feel the ice grow in the room at that point. Parents just ready to stone me because they're like, Rick, we don't want to think about this. But actually, you need to think about that. You need to think about how you're going to talk to your kid and how you're going to handle it. Because how you talk to your kid and how you handle it will ultimately have a significant impact on how your kid learns from that experience and moves forward.
Fantastic. Yeah, and I think that's really made me think quite differently. And, you know, those parents that may look at the evenings that they've got spare and the weekends they've got spare and the feel of a need to fill it with more sport and more training, you know, to make sure they're not getting behind. But actually, really, it shouldn't be about them. It should be the child that ultimately, you know, if they want to practice more or want to improve, they've got to then be the ones that lead on that. And, you know, those conversations with your child and how that child, you know, how you can support your child in speaking with their coach and maybe even facilitating their opportunities to practice, you know, that's invaluable. So look, Richard, I really appreciate your time. And I think for any parent or coach or club that's listening in on this podcast, you know, whether that be in football or in, you know, other sports, I think there's some fantastic messages out there. And I think for anyone that wants to look into any more information on that, obviously feel free to visit the Non-Perfect Dad website. And there's some real, really brilliant resources on there. I've got the book myself, and you know, every now and then, if I go home and I feel like I've had a bad day with a parent, I'll have a look at a quote a short paragraph in there, and it sort of, yeah, just reminds me of actually, you know, probably some of the challenges that parents face, you know, being on the other side of the touchline. So yeah, thank you so much. And Richard, is there any way that people listening in can reach out to you?
Drop me an email at richard@non-perfectdad.co.uk. I'd love to hear people's thoughts. Follow me on Twitter. I usually putting out lots of little videos and vlogs and Tried some new stuff last week that you can share with parents because it's a bit cheeky and a bit satire-y, and so hopefully parents, they might just connect with parents. So yeah, Twitter or Facebook, I'm on both of those, or drop me an email at richard@non-perfectdad.co.uk.
Brilliant. Thanks, Richard, and thanks for everyone listening in, and we look forward to catching up with you next time.
Hello everyone, it's Stuart here from Football DNA. Thank you for listening to our latest podcast. We hope you enjoyed it and gained some knowledge. Make sure you check out our website, www.footballdna.co.uk, for all your coaching or player development needs. We have over 800 videos on the site covering every section of the game. We have outfield and goalkeeping content from professional coaches on video, along with sports science and nutrition videos for players to become better off the pitch. The ultimate platform for coach and player development. Take care and all the best. Stuart.